Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. Croeso. This fine day in December 2020, I'm taking my constitutional. Just in a really nice high point here where I can look across the river over at Cader Idris, which has got a nice cover in the snow on it. It's rather beautiful. I won't wax too poetic about the surroundings. I'll crack on. Today, I'm going to do another in the Interesting Times series, which deals with current affairs. I'm going to talk about goings on in the Labour Party, the suspension of members, and a kind of a struggle between constituency Labour parties to kind of constituency level grassroots Labour organisations, and the central Politburo, you might call it, of the Starmer leadership, and the apparatchiks at the core of big Labour, you might say. So I'll talk about that. I've got quite a lot of detailed knowledge on that and research that I've done on that. Obviously there's a question going on at the back of my mind. The question is, well, what's going on? I can tell you in advance where I'm concluding. I'm concluding fragmentary forces. And I've spoke about this ever since I've been doing these podcasts. And I will say it again, I'm not imagining some kind of astrological effect or some movement in the world spirit. I think these forces are explicable in material terms, but also in superstructural terms or in terms of the discourse that's circulating. It's pretty complex how this stuff operates. But the big impressionist term that I would use here is fragmentary forces. And I'll try and tease some of that out with respect to the Labour Party, as it is, like, about now. I'm going to mention in passing something hopeful, which is the general strike in India. And this is not the first general strike we've had under the Modi regime. Huge strikes. This one is purported to be the biggest ever in world history, given that the farmers, many Indian farmers have joined in with workers and are protesting against a reform in the law that governs farming, and they don't like it, the implications of it. I'll mention that in passing with a few other hopeful events that are going on around the world. And I would say to you, always take at least a glance at what's going on in the world at large. Thirdly, I'm going to talk about Brexit and the point that the Brexit negotiations seem to come to. And I'm going to speculate, really, at how this might pan out. I'm going to offer a scenario. I think it's fairly likely that the scenario I'm going to mention. I'll ask you to bear in mind it is speculative, but you can see how again the big picture here is again one of fragmentation. So that'll be my overall conclusion. So I'm giving you the conclusion before I get started, but you can see my question is really, you know, what's going on? What are the patterns? What's the turbulence look like in events if we look at these fairly prominent and pertinent events that have sort of gone on in the last few days? Okay, what's happening in the UK Labour Party? As you know, the UK Labour Party is a broad church, and I'm not certain if that church isn't too broad to ever make a viable party that can do anything other than manage capitalism. The same way that the Tory party does. It may be softening the rapacious nature of the capitalism a little, maybe offering working people a few more crumbs from the table, but basically still ultimately upholding the status quo and the keeping the very well entrenched UK establishment and the global capitalism with which it is thoroughly enmeshed, very happy. And so that, to my mind, is an open question. At the moment, there is a civil war in Labour between the right, the Blairites, you might say, the people that want to manage capitalism a little bit better than the Tories, with a slightly human face, on the one hand, and the socialists on the other hand, many of whom joined the party when Jeremy Corbyn looked like having a good chance at getting the leadership, which he did. And the party did expand at that time, 2015, to over 500,000 members to become the biggest grassroots political party in Europe. And this was a moment of brief hope and optimism. The situation is that after a catastrophic general election defeat in 2019, Jeremy Corbyn stepped down from his, 4 years of leadership. And the members and the PLP and so forth, the various branches of the Labour Party, elected Keir Starmer as leader of the party and therefore leader of the opposition. Starmer promised the membership that he would adhere to the manifesto proposals, which were mildly socialistic, but included nationalisation of natural monopolies, electricity, rail, so forth, those kind of things. Would institute workers' cooperatives and would launch a New Deal style package, a stimulus package, designed to both create jobs and rescue the environment. It's a so-called Green Industrial Revolution. This was the big pitch in both the 2017 and the 2019 Labour manifestos. Starmer promised he would go along with these. And all of this, of course, in the midst of the fabricated anti-Semitism crisis. I'm presuming that you're up to speed on all this. Now, what's been happening is that under the guise of trying to stay in line with the EHRC requirements of Labour to tackle anti-Semitism in the party, that certain matters couldn't be discussed by constituency Labour parties. And a directive went out from David Evans, the General Secretary, incidentally an unelected apparatchik of the party, instructing CLPs there are certain things they couldn't discuss. And one of those was the suspension of Jeremy Corbyn from the Labour whip. Now, the story here is that Corbyn made some remarks after the EHRC report was published. He said he didn't agree with all of it, which he's entitled to do, in which the EHRC itself says he's entitled to do. And then made the claim that the degree of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party had been exaggerated by the press, which is certainly true, and by enemies of the Corbyn political project, both within the Labour Party and without of the Labour Party. Now, this latter statement was true, but it was this that offended Labour leadership, got Corbyn suspended from the Labour Party altogether. When the case was investigated, he was reinstated. But then, promptly, the Parliamentary Labour Party, or Keir Starmer himself, suspended the whip. So, Jeremy Corbyn is now a Member of Parliament, an independent Member of Parliament, who is a member of the Labour Party. The left in the grassroots party, in very large numbers, and many Jewish leftists, and some left-wing Labour MPs make a lot of noise, petitions and so forth, and motions passed at CLPs condemning the withdrawal of the whip from Jeremy Corbyn. I think that this move was entirely unconstitutional. Nobody can point out from Labour HQ what in the rule book precisely Jeremy Corbyn has infringed. He is, after all, entitled. There's such a thing as free speech in this country. And given that what he said was actually true, that the level of anti-Semitism based on complaints and expulsions and so forth in the Labour Party was probably something like 0.03%. I don't know what the exact figure is, but it's minuscule considering you've got this huge party. Most of the members are decent people. All the ones that I know are very, very decent, anti-racist, fair-minded. And very compassionate people. They don't like discrimination of any sort. So it's a huge libel on them, really. But opinion polls show that the public thinks that 30% of Labour members are anti-Semites. This is demonstrable. These are sort of fairly reliable figures. And there are other ways of demonstrating also that Corbyn spoke the truth. Now, both the press and the Starmer office are misrepresenting what Corbyn said as being a comment on the EHRC report and not a comment on the actions of the press and the enemies of the Corbyn political project. There's nothing equivocal about Corbyn's statement at all. It's a straightforward propositional statement that can be demonstrated to be true. Given how obvious it is that he was speaking the truth, given how obvious it is that he wasn't speaking about the EHRC report, it seems there must be some other agenda afoot. Now, considering this, like the suspension of many CLP chairs, secretaries and so forth, including a partial suspension on the chair of our local CLP here in Merionyth and Dwyfor for expressing solidarity with Jeremy Corbyn and expressing dismay at the action of the Starmer Politburo, call it that, in treating the man so shabbily and on no basis. Now, there is a claim made in the EHRC report that if you accuse someone of exaggeration of the degree of anti-Semitism, that you are in fact harassing those people. And Starmer and co. are trying to use that to say that Corbyn had gone against the EHRC report with his claim of exaggeration. And this proposition by the EHRC is used to accuse Corbyn and have him suspended from the Parliamentary Labour Party, or having the whip withdrawn from him. Now, a certain human rights lawyer, equalities lawyer, David Rentoff, says this would not stand a test in court. It's not the part of the EHRC to rewrite the law. The law is written by the law and interpreted by the courts. The EHRC has no power to do that. And without a shadow of a doubt, the notion that crying exaggeration is harassment would be thrown out by any court in the land. And there is case law, there is precedent case law to that effect. So he says that if Corbyn wanted to fight this out in court, he would definitely win. So you see, civil war in Labour, you can see the kind of depths to which it's gone. And I don't know how many CLPs are now in trouble, but it's a lot. And it's in double figures. And I've actually seen some of the directives given to CLP from the GLU, this central office headed up by David Evans called the GLU, which is the governance and legal unit at Labour Party HQ, have given out to CLPs and pretty well instructing them to curtail debate. And this naturally hasn't gone down well with the grassroots. Now, this civil war is represented by the right, by the Blairites, by the capitalists, as being an attempt by the left not to give Starmer a chance of being sore losers, of deliberately splitting the party, and that the party will never win an election while it's divided. Of course, this is true. Nobody likes to vote for a divided party. Even though, of course, they always do, because all British political parties are actually divided. And the left, for their part, are claiming that the Starmerites are sellouts, that the Labour Party is a democratic socialist party, which is what it says on anybody's Labour membership card, and should be committed to the institution of socialism in the UK. And it does come down to what to my mind seems like an almost incompatible broad church with wings which are just not able to form any kind of a focused worldview with which to get on the business of steering the country into the future, and hopefully into a happier and better future. So, in this context, the other day, more shit comes out of Labour HQ, and a certain Naomi Wimborne Idrissi is expelled from the party for giving a statement to an excellent news channel called Double Down News on YouTube, which incidentally I advise you to subscribe to and listen to. She talks about her experience of being told she's the wrong kind of Jew, for being a socialist, for supporting Palestinians, for finding the actions of right-wing Israeli governments utterly appalling and disgusting. And recounting her experience in a very straightforward manner on Double Down News, for which she gets expelled from the Labour Party, or at least suspended pending investigation. I mean, she's terrible. I've watched this thing several times, and there's nothing in it that's questionable. It's not very comfortable, I would think, for people with Zionist sympathies or sympathies with the current Israeli government. But nevertheless, there she is. She's I suppose, an elderly Jewish person, a Jewish socialist, and speaking the truth. And it seems now speaking the truth is the crime. And this is what ultimately concerns me the most, is the way Labour has just become as post-truth as Trump. And shortly after that, there was a certain, an elderly socialist Jew called Moshe Makover, who was also similarly suspended from the party, and from what I can see, without any reasonable grounds. However, you gloss it. So there is a purge going on. If we add to this a statement from Angela Rayner, the deputy leader, saying, we will expel, if necessary, thousands of party members. Thousands of party members, right? And Angela Ryan is a terrible disappointment, I think, because she's a working class woman. Dragged herself up and got an education. Was a care worker and so forth, and a union rep. You'd think somebody with that background would have the consciousness to see what's going on here. But she's sold out, in my opinion, Your Honour. And I'm very disappointed in her saying that. It seems to me that the party doesn't want a grassroots movement. It would perhaps be content to be like the Blairite Party with perhaps, I don't know, 100,000 members. I mean, the Tories manage with 100,000 members for popping leaflets through letterboxes. And that the main activity of the party to be a technocratic party that hones its managerial skills for managing the capitalist enterprise of UK PLC with a little bit of a slightly softer, slightly more humane face, ostensibly, than the Tories. And I'm saying that with a full consciousness that Gordon Brown did sterling work reducing child poverty in the UK at the same time as the same government, pretty well under Tony Blair, was complicit in the Iraq war with a million dead. You know, so we don't want to get too starry-eyed about the Labour Party, but they do at least on paper pretend to a certain more humane face. So, not a pretty picture of what's going on. Oh yeah, and there's another thing. I mean, I'm concluding from the expulsion of Naomi Winburn Idrisi and Moshe Makova as pretty well solid evidence that what's going on is a purge and not an attempt to deal with anti-Semitism in the party. And the concern of left-wing Jews and Jewish Voice for Labour wasn't met in the EHRC report. The only mention in the EHRC report that such people even exist was a mention that they had taken a submission from the Jewish Voices for Labour, which is a Jewish organisation within Labour that's pretty socialist. It doesn't like the Jewish Chronicle and the current Israeli state. And I have actually read their presentation to the EHRC, and the EHRC basically ignored it. And there's only that one recognition in the EHRC report that left-wing Jews actually exist. So bear in mind, thousands of these people have signed petitions and letters to defend Corbyn, who has been on their side consistently for the whole of his political career, including many Jews in his own constituency of Islington in London. And so I'm thinking on that basis we can conclude that this isn't about anti-Semitism, it's about purging the left. And I want to further this conclusion that the Labour leadership is purging the left, is quite content with a smaller membership, not to have to try and work a mass party with grassroots democracy in favour of a technocratic, centralised cabal which will manage capitalism, it hopes, better than the Tories. And I just want to add this other little piece of information that compounds my suspicion against the Labour leadership. It is that Starmer has been soliciting a billionaire property developer, David Abrams, for funds to fund the Labour Party to the tune of some millions. So that he doesn't, I presume it is, so he doesn't have to rely on the £4, £10 monthly subscriptions from members to keep the show on the road. This is extremely dodgy. Abrams, I don't want to ever be accused of libel, but I would suggest if you look into his background and things that he's said, isn't somebody, in my honest opinion, who Labour should be getting cosy with. But Tony Blair, the founder of this current right-wing tendency in Labour, didn't mind getting cosy with Rupert Murdoch in order to get the Sun newspaper to back him. And the Sun claims that Blair only won the election because the Sun backed him. And the day after the general election in which Blair won his first term, the Sun's headline said, it's the Sun what did it. And of course Tony Blair became the godfather of at least one of Rupert Murdoch's children. So I'm calling this, I'm saying fragmentation here, you know. And it's fragmentation at an ideological level, at a level of discourse, you might say. And it's along fault lines that have long existed within Labour. You know, people are talking about this being a repeat of Kinnock's expulsion of the militant tendency way back in the 20th century. So this tension has always existed within Labour. I think we can say it's always been a site of struggle. Now the dilemma for leftists, many of whom are throwing in the towel with disgust and leaving the party. Many thousands are leaving the party. We don't know exact numbers, but membership's dwindling rapidly. Some are saying stay in the party and fight. But their dilemma, of course, is that in a first-past-the-post system, leaving and starting a nice, clean-slate socialist party on past form is unlikely to work. There's only one third party that's made any headway in Parliament, and that, of course, is the Labour Party itself. Over 100 years ago. It's not to say it couldn't happen, but it does seem pretty unlikely. So the system is completely rigged against socialism ever happening of any kind of intensity or far-reaching nature, simply by the nature of the system. The establishment's got it all kind of stitched up so we can have this legitimacy through democracy, but of course there's no way for me and people like me to vote against the interests of big oil or the interests of Goldman Sachs. There's no way. So in a sense, we've got to rejig the system somehow. So that's one little item of news. Bearing in mind that we are in the midst of a pandemic, even though it looks like some kind of there is some light at the end of the tunnel with the development of seemingly effective vaccinations now. The UK is on the verge of Brexit. It's going to be chaotic. There is no doubt about it. It will be chaotic. And I think the long-term results of that will be that in next year's devolved elections that the SNP will have an absolutely stunning majority in Holyrood, in the Scottish Parliament, and will probably have enough weight as a result to press for a second referendum. I think Brexit actually will break up the United Kingdom. There doesn't seem to be a solution to the Northern Ireland border other than a United Ireland. And I think certainly before too long we will see that. Which of course will leave us here in Wales with our small population and our kind of precarious economy. Locked in with the hegemon and prey to the City of London and the much bigger, much more economically powerful England. What are we going to do? Form some kind of unit called Wengland. And there's already a movement. I mean, Welsh independence has been a thing, as an idea, for a very long time. But it's now finding a lot more simple than it ever has. I think a recent opinion poll put 33% would vote for independence. This is huge for Wales, and there's a movement called Yes Cymru, which is not to do with the Nationalist Party, but has got members across various political allegiances, but nevertheless want to push for Annibyniaeth independence. There's a movement within the Labour Party to at least, the Welsh Labour Party, to at least have discussions on Welsh independence and to figure out what it might entail, if it's feasible, if it's desirable, etc. And to do rather more detailed work than either the nationalists seem to have done, and this Yes Cymru movement seems to be, haven't got much past polemic. But there is certainly a movement. And in fact, this local CLP voted to press the Welsh Labour Party to have this investigation and in-depth debate on national independence. So I can see that Brexit's going to lead to some fragmentation. I think it'll fragment the Conservative Party even more than it already is fragmented. It will lead to difficulties, food and medicine shortages and civil unrest, which will be the series of events which ends up inadvertently promoting the Scottish Nationalist Party in the devolved government elections of next year, early next year. So, Labour, of course, has only now got one MP in Scotland, and Scotland was always the deciding factor whenever we got Labour governments. It was because there were returned quite a lot of Scottish MPs, Labour MPs. And of course, Clydeside, was the hotbed of socialism and trade unionism and that industrial shipbuilding and so forth area of Scotland. That's gone. There is now only one Labour Scottish MP, which makes it very difficult for Labour to get a majority in the House of Commons. So fragmentation is the name of the game. So the Labour Party fragmenting under, of course, pressures that have always existed within it. And how difficult this is for the left. Anybody who really wants to transform this country in a hopeful direction is really in a bit of a hard place at the moment. But I would claim that what Corbyn's proposal was a necessary start. I don't think it was a great utopian revolutionary moment. I think it was just a crack in the monolith that we could start to prise open and we could do some good things and prove that they worked. Nevertheless, it seems like it wasn't to be. Hopeful. I did promise something hopeful a few minutes ago, and I would say, well, there was a strike in India last week. And this is a general strike, and not only did it include workers, it included farmers who were protesting against an Act of Parliament made by the Modi government that basically deregulated farming, and farmers generally believe that would result in them becoming slaves to the multinational companies, even more than they already are, and was going to make their already difficult position far more difficult. So farmers were driving the tractors into Delhi, the police and the army were out, workers on strike, 250 million, this is the biggest strike in world history. I'm presuming this is supplanting the strike of last year of 200 million. These general strikes, this is not the only general strike of this character, there was one not so long ago. Huge. So seeing some pushback against Modi, despite the fact that he got a pretty large majority in the last election, the last Indian general election, which wasn't that long ago, but at least this is some powerful pushback against him. It shows that there's some degree of organisation in the Indian trade unions and so forth, and their ability to coordinate with the farmers, I think, is pretty interesting, and we should be encouraged by this. I would say the defeat of the military coup in Bolivia again is encouraging. This again is partly due to, or largely due to, people getting into the streets. It's a grassroots action. I think there's going to be no progress actually of any sort from our current position anywhere in the world and in the world in general without huge grassroots action. Social movements, and they can be very broad, isn't it? And some single issue based and all the rest of it. If they can coordinate, we can change the world. Obviously this needs to work with electoral politics where you've got it. Capturing the state is not such a bad idea, but it needs the backing of people on the streets with a clear analysis and understanding of why they need to be doing what they are doing. So there's some kind of hope, and in the midst of a lot of chaos that I think is going to get worse in the immediate future. So keep your spirits up. I'd get yourself some pasta and toilet paper, and also rice and beans, just to be on the safe side. And you can use this stuff up if we are lucky and things transpire in a slightly less chaotic way than I'm expecting at the moment. All right, thanks for listening. Over and out. We'll be in touch soon with quite a range of podcasts, all nicely planned out and so forth. So make knowledge great again. Wash your hands. Look after yourselves. Look after your friends. Build community. And lots of love.